You know, you're so busy with your company. I have a whole paragraph here of boards that you serve on. I don't know how you do it, but just a couple. I want to ask you why. The Catholic Foundation of Eastern Oklahoma, you serve on that board. That's your church, obviously.
Yeah, Jeannie and I are Catholic. And the foundation, I'm not on that now. I served on it for a long time. And I felt like that was a good way to help people in this area through the diocese.
And the Indian Nations Council of Boy Scouts, were you a scout?
No. The town I grew up in, I don't even think we had scouts.
Okay, how did you come to that council?
John, I thought that there was an opportunity to maybe push scouting into parts of Tulsa that historically the population really hadn't had scouting. So my game plan was to work with the Boy Scouts and the Catholic Church and push scouting, with the church being kind of the places where they met, mm-hmm. into parts of Tulsa that historically hadn't had that.
And how did that work?
It was a huge failure.
Oh, really?
And there are others who are trying it now, and hopefully they do a better job than I did.
Well, maybe Boy Scouts is not as interesting anymore as it was years ago?
Well, there's all sorts of issues. I mean, there are some demographics in which camping in the woods is not what they want to do. And once I realized that I wasn't going to be able to really have the impact I wanted, I kind of drifted off the Boy Scout board.
But there is a board you had a major impact on, and that's Gilcrease Museum. This is a big part of the history of our town. We're all very proud of it. Most comprehensive collection of art of the American West. By the way, are you an art collector yourself?
No, and it's funny, Gene and I have bought art over the years. It was explained to me one time that Gene and I are art decorators. We buy art that we like, put it up on the wall, and look at it, as opposed to a collector.
Well, there was a collector by the name of Thomas Gilcrease. He was an oil man, and as we know, an avid art collector. He deeded the museum to the city of Tulsa in 1958. You've served on that for some time, and right now they're in a renovation period as well. When did you come on, and why was Gilcrease important? And you're still on the board, aren't you, of mm-hmm. Gilcrease? Talk to me about your experience and the importance of that museum.
I'd have to think about when I first got involved, but the Gilcrease is owned by the city, the building and the art. Cities are normally in the business of providing fire department, police department, fixing roads, utilities, things like that. Early on, Gilcrease was run by a Gilcrease Association. There was an attorney here in town who was very involved in things like Gilcrease called Don Marlar. I'd been to Gilcrease a number of times for dinners and lunches and things, but had never really understood what Gilcrease was. Don invited me to go out there and tour the archives. And Don was a lot smarter than I was, as it turns out. What Gilcrease is known for is Russell and Remington and Burstein's and Moran's. But when you get into the archives, you realize that the art collection is extensive. There are museums who have built themselves on a dozen Moran's. Gilcrease has tens of dozens. But what you really realize is we have a document collection that has never really been understood, never really been promoted, that is extraordinarily world-class. We also have other archival artifacts that are in the basement. Don arranged me to go down in the basement, and I saw all of Paul Revere's writings, Ben's letter to Custer after Custer said, "Come quick." I saw the Declaration of Independence. We have several hundred thousand pages of documents from the Spanish colonization of Mexico. It is just phenomenal what we have. What you soon realize is that that's a treasure that could change the perception of Tulsa worldwide. When people who are knowledgeable about these kind of things come to Tulsa, the first thing they say is, you need to have the whole world know what Gilcrease is. I've heard that time after time after time. So I got involved early on with the view being that this really is something that separates Tulsa from all other cities, really, in the U.S. I was in the meeting with Stead Upman from the University of Tulsa when Kathy Taylor proposed that the University of Tulsa run it. And that was, I think, brilliant on Mayor Taylor's part. University of Tulsa, you know, that was a new thing for them. They had to kind of think it through. But Gilcrease is world class. And we need to somehow or another convince the rest of the world that we have it.
Yes. So the city owns it, but management comes from the University of Tulsa, is the way the model is now.
Mm-hmm. What the intent is to really redefine what Gilcrease is, because, as I said, most people who know about Gilcrease walk out there and they see the art hanging on the wall. And that's remarkable. That's phenomenal. That's fantastic. But Gilcrease is much, much more deeper than that with the archives and the documents. We need to promote all of Gilcrease, not just what we've got hanging on the wall.
Yeah. I interviewed Gene Gilcrease, who is the grandson of Thomas Gilcrease and other members of his family. I went down to Texas to do that. He has fond memories of Thomas and sitting out on the porch there in the house and all that. So those who would like to know more about Thomas through the eyes of a grandson, Gene Gilcrease's interview is on our website. You have more than a passing interest in history, and you have been particularly supportive of oral history, and in this case, Voices of Oklahoma. Tell us why.
Oh, you know, it's interesting. I grew up, like I said, south of Amarillo in a small town and did not even realize the local history. Or if I realized it, I didn't care. The time that I was in Denmark, I'd go to the little church near our community that we lived in, a very, very small community in Denmark, had been one kind or another church for like 800 years. Just had no impact on me. But what I realized at some point was that history matters, and we are what we are because of history. So I started getting more and more interested in understanding history. And I think it's important, more so than ever, that we preserve our history and that we keep history alive with younger and younger demographic people. The new generations, I mean, we all know this, they learn from an iPhone or some other phone held in their hand. Their attention span is 30 characters or whatever the limit is. And their group is the people that they associate with on social media. And so this history, we need to capture it, in my view. We need to understand it. And at some point, I think, what you're doing with Voices of Oklahoma, with the possible exception of me, is going to be very, very important for us understanding our history. Oklahoma, in many ways, is an old, old area, territory, land, with hundreds of years of history, thousands of years. And John, what you're doing, capturing people telling their story, Gene and I think will be very important. I think it's very important now. We've already seen people accessing your site and using it in editorials and using it in news articles.
It was used in an obituary the other day.
Was it?
Yes.
I missed that. So I think capturing that history in that person's voice is pretty critical.
Yeah. And I want to thank you, too, because we're in our 10th anniversary, and you've been with us largely most of those years and great support. So I want to thank you for that.
No, I thank you for doing what you're doing.
Well, I find it to be fun. So advice to young people who are listening, whether they want to be in the petroleum business or whatever, they're seeking a career, what do you say to them?
We start every company meeting here at the company with really talking about culture. I think no matter what you're doing, you need to give a lot of thought to a couple of points. And one of them is, if you don't have core integrity, it doesn't matter. So if you're not thinking about integrity through all aspects of your life, nothing else really matters. I think you need to have a feeling that your job is to take care of others. I think you need to have a feeling that your job is to respect, treat people the way you want to be treated. Treat people, you know, maybe more than you want to be treated. And I think we're all kind of in this together. You know, it's a lot of teamwork and success, but the one thing that we were taught early on was you got to work at it. And I was taught that you need to be around quality people. Life is short. Sometimes it's a lot of fun to be with people who maybe aren't as high quality as you like, but we were always taught to make sure that whatever time you have, spend it with the most high-quality people you can and try and learn from them. So my advice to young people would be, don't just let things happen without you being somewhat focused on trying to make the right thing happen.
Then we ask, how would you like to be remembered?
Oh, well, that's pretty personal in some ways, but I want to be remembered as someone who really tried to be a good father and a good husband, first and foremost. If I'm not there, then I've failed. And, you know, none of us know how to raise kids. I mean, when you pick up your first kid, there's no degree that says you know how to do this. But that's first and foremost. I want to be remembered by my family as having tried to do the right thing. And on top of that, I think I'd like to be known as someone who represented his industry and his church well. Church before industry, but represented them well.
I'm sure there'll be many who concur with that statement. You know, you and I have interacted a lot down over the years in short spurts and so forth, but it was fun to sit across from you here face to face and visit with you, and I enjoyed it very much. Thank you.
No, John, thank you very much for what you do.
Yep, so, you're welcome. Okay.